4, United States v. Brodnicki.
May it please the Court. Your Honor, the principal question raised in this appeal is whether during the jury selection process, if a judge makes it the case that government or jurors that indicate a government-friendly disposition are questioned in such a manner that they can only be excused by way of a peremptory challenge, and jurors who indicate a defendant-friendly disposition are immediately...
How did he have any peremptories left when he finished the voir dire?
When the voir dire was over, the defendant had no peremptory challenges remaining. He had to use two of his peremptory challenges on two potential jurors who stated to Judge Dara, one said specifically when asked, can you be fair, said, honestly, I don't think so. And then Judge Dara went on to say...
Have you read the Ryan case, by the way, just academically?
Your Honor, I don't recall that case name off the top of my
head.
Well,
he was the governor of Illinois.
Are you talking about Governor Ryan? Yeah, I'm familiar with the Ryan case. Yes, Your Honor.
Did you read about the jury selection and the voir dire examination?
Yes, Your Honor. And
after that, you think you can still make a straight-faced argument that you got cheated on this one?
Well, Your Honor, I think the problem here, Governor Ryan's case set aside, I think the problem here is that the treatment of one kind of juror, a defense-friendly juror, was totally different than the treatment of a prosecution-friendly juror. And the treatment should be the same. It's my position that Mr. Brodnicki could not be afforded due process of law if the process he got was tilted in favor of the government. If the entire jury selection process, and it appeared to be, is such that if you say you're friendly to the government or indicate, in fact, as one juror did, I think I have a prejudice for the federal government, if you do that, then the response is a bunch of questions that allows you to stay on the panel. And the other thing to consider here...
But here we had a situation where the jurors admitted that his son had been badly beaten by the police.
Yes.
Aaron follows up, you know, whether he would be unfair. He said yes. And then it comes out that the juror himself had a very negative experience with the police.
Right, but...
So can't the judge sort of weigh the experience of the juror and then determine how much follow-up needs to be done?
Certainly, but I think the problem, Your Honor, here is that Juror Lane, the juror who said he had problems with the police, did not say, yes, I can't be fair. Juror Lane, when asked, the question to his answer in the transcript was, I don't know. I'm not sure. I think exactly the quote was, I'm not sure. Now, when a juror that said, I think that I favor the government, and then Judge Dara asked, can you be fair? Can you set that aside? She said, honestly, I don't think so. He kept questioning her until she was able to stay on the panel and had to be excused by peremptory challenge. When Juror Lane said, Your Honor, I don't know, he didn't ask him another question. He sent him out the door.
Well, there was a qualitative difference in the nature of the claimed bias in the cases of those two jurors, though. The one that you're referring to as having a pro-government bias said she had an uncle who worked at the Pentagon.
That's one of the two.
And that hung her up for a little while until the judge rehabilitated her, and she said she could be fair.
Yes.
That's a lot different qualitatively than a prospective juror who has himself been roughed up by the police and whose son had been beaten by the police. That's a pretty, anti-government bias of a significantly different nature.
Perhaps it certainly is qualitatively different than the woman who had someone working at the Pentagon. However, I think the problem here is the first juror, which was not the Pentagon juror, was Juror Varno, first juror.
But Varno says her brother-in-law lost his son in a car accident, and there was a lawsuit, and the suit hadn't been resolved. And so that had to do with just the justice system in general, whether
correct.
The experience that the brother-in-law had would unfairly
yes.
bias the juror.
Correct, but the problem is that juror, when asked, can you set that aside? Her answer was a definitive, honestly, I don't think so. It was pretty definitive. And Judge Dara then questioned her further and said, well, you have a duty. And if you had a duty, then you could certainly follow the duty. If you had an oath, you could certainly follow the oath and sort of led her down the path.
But that's a standard question that trial judges use,
right?
Because jurors don't necessarily understand the significance of the oath, what the oath means, and in order to develop a challenge for cause, I think a court has to ask that question once the jurors have the understanding that they are under oath and what they're supposed to do as jurors is to weigh the evidence. Once the court sort of instructs them on that and then asks the question, I mean, I think that's a precursor to cause.
And I agree, Your Honor. The problem that I have is that when it came to Juror Lane and he said, I'm not sure, he didn't get the follow-up questions about the oath and about the duty. He was treated differently than those government jurors that got all that questioning. And the other thing to think about is the jurors.
The government jurors, I assume the jurors were not selected on the basis of their being affiliated either with the government or the defense, that they were just drawn from a regular jury list.
Sure, yes. When I say government jurors, what I mean is jurors that indicated a government-friendly disposition or a fear or a belief that they might be prejudice toward the government, the two that are noted. That's what I mean when I say government jurors. But the other thing to consider is the entire panel is sitting there, and they're seeing this go on. And the panel sees that when two jurors indicate, well, I think I might be biased in favor of the government, they're questioned until a point comes where they're allowed to stay on the panel and can only be excused later. When a juror indicates he has some problems with the police, and he goes and has a meeting with the judge, and then he walks out the door immediately. He doesn't get to go back to the panel. He doesn't get to stay there. And so this is it's a different appearance that is visible to all the jurors.
So
you're not
your
claiming
beef
that.
Your beef is that this sort of permeated the other jurors and tainted them?
I think it very possibly could have. They saw the process take place in this way.
But no one, of course, made that objection at the trial. Defense counsel didn't make that objection.
What objection?
That the whole panel had been tainted and therefore the panel should be dismissed because of the responses and the methods that the judge used in questioning the jurors.
That particular objection was not made by trial counsel, no.
And the individual voir dire of Juror Lane was done outside the presence of the rest of the panel.
His first Juror Lane indicated that he had some problems. And he, after making that indication, the details were disclosed outside the presence.
Right,
that's
so there
true.
Can't possibly have been any taint.
I wouldn't agree with that. I think it's not saying that it's not possible. The jurors that said, I favor the government, stayed in the box.
Then if there's a taint, then every jury trial is tainted, because the only way the judge is going to know that there's a need to do confidential individual voir dire is if a juror answers affirmatively in response to a particular question.
Well, but the problem here, Your Honor, is one of the problems I'm talking about in terms of potential taint here is that Juror Lane was excused immediately and just walked out. He didn't get to go back to the box. Now, even if it had been a for-cause challenge, and the Judge Dara had determined after everybody returned to the box and we went over to talk about for-cause challenges and peremptories, if he had determined at that point that Juror Lane should be excused for cause, he could have been excused along with everybody else that was excused for peremptory challenges, the two jurors that the defense used peremptories for. That didn't happen.
What's
Juror
wrong
Lane
with that
was
procedure?
What's that?
What is constitutionally wrong with that procedure?
Which procedure?
Excusing him immediately as opposed to keeping him in the pool even though he's been struck.
No one challenged Juror Lane. He was excused
to respond. Right, he was struck for cause by the court.
By the court, that's
right.
Correct.
And what's wrong with excusing him immediately as opposed to having him sit through the rest of the process even though he's already
been
struck?
What I'm saying is it creates an appearance of difference to everybody sitting in that box.
So then we're back to that same thing.
I was just trying to explain that same issue a little bit further. But really, the most important issue here.
You're in your rebuttal, you know.
Do you want to save any time?
At this point, Your Honor, yes, I will save the remainder.
Because you've designated 2 minutes for rebuttal, so you're in your time.
I receive the remainder for my rebuttal. Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Hickey?
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Maggie Hickey, and I have the privilege of representing the United States in this case. The defendant's attempt to make a convoluted argument of a due process violation is completely meritless. First, and most important in this case, the defendant does not assert that the panel or that the jury that sat in the box at his trial was not impartial. The controlling authority in this case is the Supreme Court case Martinez-Salazar, which makes it crystal clear that a defendant exercising a peremptory challenge to remove a juror who should have been removed for cause does not violate the due process clause. And in fact, jurors Barno and Stampinato, the district court's decision to not dismiss jurors Barno and Stampinato for cause was correct. It's the district court's duty to explore potential bias of jurors and to push to unequivocal answers. Both Barno and Stampinato, upon questioning by the judge, provided unequivocal answers about their ability to be fair. And great deference is given to the district court judges because of their unique position to view and judge the credibility and the demeanors of the jurors that are answering questions at the time. And as to Juror Lane, the defendant's argument that the excusal of Juror Lane for cause was error is completely wrong. Defendant Lane requested a sidebar. Therefore, none of the questioning then was in front of the jury, and there was no way that a jury was tainted, an argument that we're hearing for the very first time
That's
here.
Okay. It won't be considered anyway, so go ahead.
Thank you. Juror Lane requested a sidebar because he had some personal experiences that he wanted to share with the court. During that sidebar, he explained to the court that his son had been badly beaten by the police and he wasn't sure that he could be fair. The judge continued to question him, and it further came out that Juror Lane himself had been handled, he believed, with by force by the police.
We read the briefs.
After the judge excused Juror Lane, and there was no objection by either side, and Juror Lane left the courtroom. The defendant only raised an objection to Juror Lane later on, after a second panel was questioned. And then truly, that was no objection at all, because when further questioned by the judge, who said, "Why didn't you raise this when I could have done something about it?" said, "Well, we really don't have a problem with Juror Lane. We have a problem with the fact that you didn't excuse for cause three other jurors." So in fact, that is no objection, and it should be waived or at least forfeited. And for those reasons, we ask that this court affirm the judgment of the district court. And I'm happy to ask and answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Hickey. Mr. Brindley, how much time does he have? 2 minutes.
Please, the court, counsel. I think the principal problem here is that, as counsel said, that the court does have an obligation to push for unequivocal answers when jurors indicate some question about whether they can be fair. The problem here is the two jurors who indicated that they may have a bias for the government were pushed for unequivocal answers in ways that the juror who said he had a bias potentially for the defense was not.
Actually, the two jurors that you're claiming had a bias in favor of the government, only one of those started out with one and said she could set it aside. The other one had a bias against the justice system as a whole. She wasn't a pro-government juror.
Well, in
she
any
was
event,
at
I
least
was,
ostensibly
I
an anti-government juror.
I don't know if she was an anti-government juror. In any event, those jurors were treated differently than a juror who indicated that he had a potential bias in favor of the defense. And it is our position that that difference makes the entire jury selection process, it tilts it toward the government and gives them a different method of how they have to handle their peremptory challenges, and that difference violates Mr. Brudnicki's right to due process.
All right.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Were you appointed?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yeah, we
yes.
Thank you for your appointment, and special thanks to Mr. Joshua Jones for your vigorous argument and your brief. We thank the government for their fine brief and argument, and Mr. Brindley, be on time next time.